Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm Susie Carrig from the New Zealand Spirit Guide. And today we're heading upriver to Whanganui, where a tiny distillery with a lot of heart is turning pears, garden botanicals and bold ideas into award-winning gin. Papa Iti is the work of Nikki and Adrian, a hands-on small batch operation rooted in their riverside property, complete with an old orchard, a curious still, and a real love for the place. From the foraged kawakawa to homegrown herbs, everything about these gins tell a story. And their lineup is growing with new releases joining the core range and seasonal bottles that celebrate the land around them. So how did it all begin and what's next for this flavorful little distillery? Nikki joins me now. Welcome, Nikki, to the show.
Thank you, Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
Lovely. Right, Nikki, before all of this, before the orchard, the still and the awards, what were you up to in Wellington and what kind of work were you doing? And was gin even on the radar?
Oh, no, not at all. We were both working pretty conventional jobs in Wellington in marketing and financial compliance, foreign insurance. So nothing to do with spirits at all. And gin wasn't really on the radar apart from, you know, enjoying the odd G&T.
Okay, and then one day you find yourself in Whanganui, standing in front of a house by a river with this old pear orchard on the property. What drew you in and how did the idea of a gin distillery come from looking at this property?
We actually came across the house by chance on a bike ride. And it was this beautiful old villa, lovingly restored with 5 hectares of land around it. And it just felt right, like it was made for us. And we put in an offer, missed out, then somehow got a second chance. And 6 weeks later, we'd sold our place and we were moving to Whanganui. And it wasn't until the settlement visit that we realized the real surprise that all those trees in the paddocks were an old pear orchard, still producing tons of fruit every year. And that got us thinking. We weren't cider or pear people, but we'd always thought distilleries were really fascinating. And our go-to drink had always been a gin and tonic. So the idea clicked, what if there was something we could do with those pears in a distillery? And turns out there was.
Right. Okay, so you're on the land with these trees full of pears and somehow gin becomes the answer. What were those early experiments like? Are you self-taught or did you train as a distiller? Was there a light bulb moment that you were like, yes, we're doing this, or was it just sheer determination?
Definitely no professional training whatsoever. We, funnily enough, we actually set up the business before we'd even made a drop of gin. I just come back from an entrepreneur's conference or like a boot camp where the big takeaway was, if you're thinking about starting a business and you keep waiting for the perfect moment, you're never going to start. So we figured once we had this thought, Pears Distillery, is there something? We went all in. We registered the company, wrote business plans, signed the lease for premises before we'd done our first real recipe test. Bit crazy, maybe. but by the first time we finally fired up this little 2-liter alembic still, we'd already talked about the recipe for months. It was a very theoretical process, just mulling over it, botanicals, what balance, how would the pears fit in? And when that first batch came out, not just drinkable, but actually quite promising, that was the moment where we thought, okay, I think we can do this. It obviously needed a lot of refinement. It had no nose whatsoever, but the foundation was there. And that's when we thought, this could actually work.
Wow. Okay, so your gins feel very much rooted in the land. You grow some of the botanicals, forage for others, and of course there's the pear signature. Can you walk us through your whole approach to the recipe development? You talk about that it was very theoretical at the beginning, but sort of what does local flavor mean to you?
It's a really great question, because personally, for me, it's a little bit ironic because I never really had roots anywhere growing up, as you can hear. So to end up making gin that's so deeply tied to one place feels almost counterintuitive. But moving to Whanganui changed that entirely. For the first time, I felt truly at home. And for Adrian, it was more like a coming home. And out of that came this strong urge to tell the land through that flavor. So when we talk about local flavor, yeah, it's about botanicals, the kawakawa we forage, the herbs from the garden, the pears from the orchard, but it's also about character and reflecting the kind of the spirit of the place itself. So the Whanganui Dry, for instance, has pink peppercorn, which is not very local, mint and almonds. It's a London Dry at its core, but with a modern twist. And that's what Whanganui is to us. It's rooted in tradition, sometimes seen as a little bit old-fashioned, but with a lot of new energy coming through. And that's reflected in the spirits.
Right. So let's talk about your gins. So you had the original core range that told the beautiful story, your orchard gin, drawing on those old pear trees, the potager inspired by the garden botanicals, and then, as you just mentioned, your Whanganui Dry. But now there's three new faces on the shelf. You've got your Mountain to Sea, which has been around a little while, the bold and bracing Navigator, and the very eye-catching Rouge Coco. Can you tell us the story behind those new additions and what led to bringing them into the core lineup?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't really tell stories about Whanganui without talking about the river, right? So Mountains to Sea captures that whole journey. Horopito from the mountains, Manukali for the riverbanks, and then kelp for the ocean. Then the river naturally leads us out to sea, which is where the Navigator comes into play. And that one really was Adrian's passion project. He's a sailor, and it draws on those flavors of maritime adventure. You have the crushed oyster shells, the kelp, the touch of fresh orange, like sailors once used to ward off scurvy. And then, of course, once you've navigated the seas, the dream destination is the tropical island. And that's where the Rogue Coco takes you, with raspberry, hibiscus, and coconut. The coconut is where we're going a little rogue, because that's where it adds the creamy mouthfeel. And it's a little bit of a playful holiday feel. So really, the three new gins form kind of a journey from the land to the ocean to that holiday escape.
Ah, right. They really do go on further. Okay, now you've also done some beautiful seasonal and limited releases, often inspired by local environments or a particular business or a moment in time. How do those gins come to life? And what's the process behind deciding to bottle something special or even do a short run?
They are really something like our creative outlet. I mean, we love our core range, but we also like to play around. So this is a chance to experiment, push the boundaries a little bit, and tell stories that go beyond the core range. Sometimes they're inspired by an occasion. So we had our Pride Gin, Love and Rainbows, which used fruit to represent every single color of the rainbow. If it's a very full botanical basket, as you can imagine. Spring Gin, bursting with florals, and then our Christmas Gin, that tasted like a boozy Christmas pudding. Midwinter release, there was a little bit like an apple pear crumble. So we tried to evoke the seasons there. Others, like the Weimaria Gin, they are really rooted in place, drawing on the botanicals found along the river journey. So kawakawa, blackberry, marshmallow root for a smoky note, because it's a steamboat. Wow. And sometimes it's really just the sparks comes from the flavor. We do run gin crafting classes where people can come and choose their own botanicals. And it's just an excellent research and development opportunity for us, because they often choose botanical combos that we didn't think about. And it gives us a wonderful pool of ideas. And when something really, you know, sings, then we feel like it deserves to be bottled, even if it's just for a small run.
Wow. Now, one of my favorite limited releases was last Christmas, you released a festival snow globe, complete with swirling white flakes when you shook the bottle. For me, this brought back so many childhood memories of Dad coming back from overseas with the snow globes. Is there any chance that you're making a comeback with this gin again this year?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes. Not long to go now. Watch the socials or sign up for our newsletter. It will happen again.
Okay, that's exciting. Right, now, as we've mentioned, you are big on local connections, whether that's foraging or collaborating. What are some of the community projects or partnerships that you've done? I've heard you've made gins for weddings or even the local hotel.
Yeah, local connections are a huge part of what we do. I think it's partially because the local support from the get-go was so strong and we're so connected to this place that we figured like we want to have our little network of collaborators here. And the Vimaria gin is probably the best example. We created that with the crew from the Vimaria, developed that recipe together. It was meant to be a one-off fundraiser with $10 from each bottle going back to the boat, but it's proved so popular that we're now four batches in and counting. The Pride gin was also a fundraiser, and then there are bespoke collaborations, like with Blue Duck Stations, where we worked with them on a recipe inspired by the botanicals growing on their land, or a Major Tatum, a gin we created with a Tatum wedding menu just north of Wellington, named after the original owner of the homestead. And right now we're working with Romney Lane Homestead, they're near Fielding, on a gin featuring Mexican marigold that grows all around their property. And Wow. Yeah, and then of course weddings, couples come in, design a recipe with us and end up with their own signature wedding day gin to serve on the day or gift to guests, which is just so personal and, let's be honest, way more fun wedding giver.
Yeah, let's face it, you'd love to go to a wedding and the wedding favor is a little bottle of gin. I mean, what a great wedding. Okay, now, how important is the relationship with your region? You know, you talk about the botanicals, but the people, the sport, stories, and the flavour of Whanganui.
It's really at the heart of everything we do. Whanganui is such a special place. It's full of history, culture, creativity. It's New Zealand's only UNESCO City of Design, and you can see that. You can feel that in the energy here. People are generous with ideas. They're really quick to lend a hand, really committed to supporting local. You really feel that. And Adrian and I try to reflect that in the way we work and give back. So I chair Main Street Whanganui. Adrian chairs Artists Open Studios, which is one of the country's biggest art festivals. So our connection to community goes well beyond gin. It's really about being part of a thriving town and sharing that message.
Wonderful. Okay, now let's talk about your awards. You've earned some pretty major recognitions, gold, double golds, even international medals. What does that kind of feedback mean for you as a small producer? Does it change how you think about what you're doing, or is it more a reassuring nod that you're on the right path? And what's been the most meaningful award for you?
We're small now, but we definitely don't want to stay small. So that kind of recognition means a lot. For trade customers especially, it makes a difference. If you've just won a gold medal in London, there's so many gins out there, and those shiny stickers really do help bottles stand out and get them onto the shelves, and that's crucial if you want to have a business that survives. And yeah. That said, entering international competitions is a huge investment. It's easily up to $1,000 once you factor in fees, shipping and duties, and there's no guarantee you'll come home with a medal. So when our Orchard Gin was named category winner at the Gin Guide Awards in the UK this year, that was a huge highlight. That was massive. To be recognized among the best gins in the world still feels a bit surreal, but it tells us we're striking a chord there. And at the same time, the feedback that really stays with us is closer to home. That's the moment someone comes into our cellar door, like takes a sip, their eyes light up and they turn to us and tell us, I've never tasted anything like this before. That's just as meaningful as any medal. This direct feedback from the customers, that just means the world to us.
Yeah, especially when when you're at festivals and they say, "Oh yes, absolutely. I've got your bottle. I love your gin," and
absolutely.
Just that energy and positivity. now I hear there is some really big. There's a bigger still on the way, and possibly plans for a gin bar in town. What is on the horizon for Papa E.T. and what are you most excited about?
Oh, all the things. The new still, the big still, is finally up and running, and it's an absolute game changer. It's quadrupling our output, which means we can be a lot more efficient and spend less time on repetitive distilling days and more time on the creative side of things. But the really, really big news is that we're moving into town. We've way outgrown our current space. It's getting really, really cramped. So we're opening the distillery. We like to keep it concise. That's the name going to be. A shared bar and cellar door with Good Bones Distilling, a local distillery who focuses on vodka and liqueurs at the moment. And it's a huge project. Renovations, shifting equipment, licensing, menus, staffing. And we're aiming to open just before Christmas. So it's a lot of a juggle, but we're incredibly excited. And once that's all humming along, we will start to look into making office whiskey.
Ooh. Exciting times. So are you hoping to run the gin school from your new premise as
well? Absolutely. Yeah, we will keep running gin crafting classes, probably slightly different schedule, but that's details. There will be a cellar door dedicated for tastings, and there will be a bar area where you can have a drink with a little outside seating. So plenty of event space, plenty of opportunities to enjoy our gin.
Oh, so if you're in Whanganui, this is obviously a must stop to visit two great distilleries. And again, that's a sign of great collaboration that you have, in an industry where sometimes people look at it as competition, the two of you under one roof just brings you in. So exciting times ahead. Right, Nikki, so it's the end of the working week. What is the go-to drink of yours that you enjoy the most?
Oh, I love my spirits neat or on the rocks, really. I think that comes with being a distiller. You kind of want to get the flavors because the distillers worked so hard on getting them in there, so you want to taste them. I most likely sit down with a gin or a whiskey from our market research collection, what we call the home bar. I really love complex, almost savory gins, like our Mountains to Sea. You can just sip that like a whiskey, really. But there are so many excellent New Zealand spirits out there. I think we're lucky to have an industry that is punching way above its weight internationally. So the quality of spirits that we find in New Zealand is outstanding, and there are so many favorites. There's probably no time to list them all, but if I could pick, it's probably like Mount 5 Shearwater gin is absolutely outstanding. It's so good. You can like feel Kaikoura sea breeze in there.
Yes.
Or the Cadrona whiskies. I mean, there's, how can you choose? You just
But you out of your gin range, I know that your Pottinger is your passion. That was your baby. Remember you telling me a while ago that was always your dream. So how do you stop almost? Like, does it get to a point that, because I know with myself, I think, oh, now that would make a good gin. Where do you stop?
I don't know. I mean, do you ever stop? I mean, with every new thing that you create, you learn so much more. You learn more about how you can push the boundaries a little further. So now we have a gin range that we are so incredibly proud of. We're really interested in like looking, can we make a whiskey? And what would that look like? Can we make a rum? Because Adrian is Adrian Rumney. We kind of have to make a rum, right? It's like, it's right there in the name. And then there are liqueurs that don't exist in the New Zealand market. Like, could we try something like that? Could we look into Woodruff, for example, which is huge where I come from, but not basically doesn't exist here. So there are so many fun things that you can still try out and experiment with. And I think the more you do that, the more there still is to see. So I don't think I don't think that that stops anytime soon.
And now that we've got the bigger still, you know, there's gonna be some exciting things to come out of Papa Iti in the future. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Right, Nikki, well, thank you for sharing your story of Papa Iti Gym with us. From the surprise house on the river to the international awards, your story is certainly full of heart, flavour and a real connection to a place which, by the sounds of it, is something you haven't had a great deal of. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Just doing distilling, you're doing storytelling in a glass, and we can't wait to see what comes next. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So if you're curious to taste what Nikki and Adrian have been crafting, head over to the NewZealandSpiritGuide.com or look out for Papa Iti in bottle stores and bars around the country. Whether it's a peer forward orchard, the herbaceous pottinger, or the playful rogue cocoa, it's plenty to discover. I'm Susie from the New Zealand Spirit Guide. Until next time, support local, stay curious, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This episode was made with support from Irirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. You can listen back to this and to other episodes online at accessmedia.nz, on Apple Podcasts, and on Spotify.